What is it with portals, doorways, and gates that always draws me in? Why do I keep wanting to use this trope in my gaming? And is it the kind of thing that has value to me as a game master?
If you say the real life fills up your days and you don't have time to play, midlife is the best time to start a new role-playing phase. And you need a rescue. Jay's coming at you with a rescue. A role-play rescue. Jay's gonna help my friend. Let's sit down to game again. Rescue.
Hello, rescuers. My name is Che Webster, and this is Roleplay Rescue. As long as I can remember, I've been inspired by and drawn into what is commonly called portal fantasy, a story which transports the characters into a magical world via a gate, wardrobe, magical tree, or anything else the author might imagine. Today, I want to explore that trope a little and try to understand why it always seems to fire up my imagination. This is Season 9, Episode 10, Portals to Adventure. I think the original portal to fantasy, for me, was the big screen. I vividly remember the opening scene to Star Wars, first seen by me at the Odeon Cinema in Norwich sometime around my 7th birthday in April 1978. Records show that the film had a general UK release in late January 1978, and I'm willing to bet it was my birthday treat to go see the film in April. For me, it was the first cinema release that I can remember seeing, and it transported me into the universe of Star Wars in a way that very few other media experiences ever have. The opening scene of Star Wars is the pursuit of a small starship by a very much bigger starship, the capture and boarding action that comes next, and I can remember the door on board that captured ship fizzing open just before the stormtroopers piled through. And then, of course, we encountered Darth Vader. I still shiver with the anticipation of that scene today. And I was captured by all the portals in that film, not least of which include the door that closes prior to the launch of the droids onto Tatooine, the Jawa transporter, the cave in which Ben Kenobi lives, the hyperdrive tunnel, the opening maw of the Death Star, the prison, the trash compactor, and there are many, many more. To me, a doorway is a liminal space between different places. And I'm not sure if it's true, but I heard somewhere that each time we pass a portal, move between rooms in our homes, for example, the brain resets itself, perhaps explaining why I forget why I went upstairs or into that room from this one. Doorways, portals, gates, tunnels, they all hold great potential in my mind and imagination. And of course, there are other kinds of portals between places. The experience of opening a box or a book is a movement from the world as we know it into a world that includes new possibilities. But perhaps that's too broad an application of the concept. There are many classic uses of portals in popular legend, fantasy, and speculative fiction. The wardrobe to Narnia, the TARDIS door, the Stargate, and the gates to Hades, just to name a few. I remember my next major encounter with portals. That was with the Ultima 1 computer game. The gateway that transported people to Britannia and the moon gates that allowed travel across that realm. I was drawn into that fantasy world and I still love it to this day. And so it is little surprise that my own realm of Mistamere has moon gates, different perhaps but clearly influenced by those from Britannia. It doesn't surprise me to think that the Third Imperium of the Traveller role-playing game, with its jump drives that form a portal into jump space as a shortcut across real space, also inspired me from the beginning. I wanted to go to new places from the moment that R2-D2 conned C-3PO into getting into that life pod. And when I saw the map of Dragon Pass in the RuneQuest box set, I was equally desirous to go and explore that new place. Portals are where the adventure is at for me, and it might be a useful tool too. The biggest conceptual gap in any role-playing game lies between the experience of the players in the so-called real world and the experience of the characters in the secondary other world. In other words, it's hard for players to imagine themselves into the minds and experience of their characters. Narrowing that conceptual cognitive gap is an important goal in game design. If you can't help players to inhabit their characters, then they will cease to play in role and instead hover outside of and around their characters as pawns. Now, for many players, this is just fine. I see the token or miniature on the table, I look down on the map of the village, and I know that this character and me are separate, but that's okay if that's the way I want to play. But some players want to inhabit the experience of their characters. When I play, I want to vicariously experience the sensations of being in that fantastic world through the senses of my character. But at the same time, I know that I am not my character. The distance from my experience to the character's experience prevents me immersing myself in those vicarious sensations. But what if my character is from the primary real world and, through the use of a portal, they can enter into the secondary other world as a newcomer? Suddenly the distance is lessened. I suppose the greatest immediacy would come from simply imagining myself and my friends entering the portal and appearing in this fantastic new world. This is the idea behind the classic Dungeons & Dragons cartoon series, in which a bunch of kids from the 1980s travel through the Dungeons & Dragons train ride and enter into the other world of the D&D universe. And when they arrive, the Dungeon Master becomes their friendly guide. Transformed into archetypal roles within that world, they begin to learn about the other world. I think that this is a useful tool for our own gaming. Now then, I am going to caveat that claim by saying it's a useful tool for the first steps taken into another world. I think that once the distance between our experience of that other world and this primary world has closed a bit, we can more easily imagine ourselves into the roles of characters who have always lived within the imagined other world. Portals are, I think, a good way to first step into a fantastic world. First contact with a new imaginary world is important. For me, first contact with the universe of Star Wars came through the story of Episode 4 of the Star Wars saga. From that point on, it became easier for me to imagine my way into the Star Wars universe and take on roles within it. As Episodes 5 and 6 came along, I discovered that the universe I was exploring was far bigger than I initially imagined. Once my friends brought the West End Star Wars RPG to the table, I had enough of a frame of reference to play a convincing role as a smuggler, rebel, or other lowlife scumbag in the Star Wars universe. And of course, through the novels and other media, like illustrated guides to the universe, deck plan books, and such, my understanding of that other world expanded. My point here is that the film was my portal into that universe. And novels do this for us too, as do TV series and comic books, and all the other media we can consume. Worlds are presented to us via the first encounter, and those worlds aggregate into a perception of reality through our continued interactions within them. But what is the lowly game master without the skill to write a novel, the financial backing to produce a movie, or the skill to even paint a picture? What is that lowly game master to do when they want to share an otherworld with other people? One option is to steal someone else's otherworld. Another is to build your otherworld upon the reality of the primary world, to play games which tweak just a very few of the accepted parameters of the real world so that your players can easily understand them. Or you can borrow the tropes of literature, film, and TV to construct your own combination from all that is already out there. And you can be pretty successful at doing that. And that's what most GMs, I think, actually do. But I can't help think about the magic invoked in older literature by the deployment of a portal. Baum's Oz, Lewis's Narnia, Carol's Rabbit Hole. These were gateways into fantastic worlds indeed. Could taking my players through a portal into my other world be a useful means of transporting their minds from the mundane experience of the primary world into the adventure to be vicariously experienced in the secondary? I'd like to find out, and I can't help wonder if other people might like to find out too.
Rescue!
One of the first questions to consider is the scale of the other world you wish to explore. Is it a single location? A mythical isle hidden in some out-of-the-way place within our own world? Harder to do now, perhaps, in our GPS-mapped modern world. Or does the other world include the Earth as we know it? Is it a wider universe we are exploring? A portal to a magical mansion is one thing. A gateway to another world or a network of gateways to myriad other worlds. That is something quite different. I think there is great mileage to be had in taking contemporary characters into a fantastic place and allowing them to explore it from the viewpoint of being modern contemporary characters. When Jenny, the salesperson for a major corporation, steps into the realm of magic, we get to explore her reaction to that world just as much as we get to explore the mythical land she has arrived in. We get to test her ethics and morality. Will she kill to survive, as we always suspected she might when we saw her in action as a salesperson? Or will she, in fact, not have the stomach for actual murder? What about Daniel, the archaeologist who has long believed in alien life? He steps through the Stargate into a land of desert and pyramids. I know. Hang on. Someone has already done that story, right? I think that a world where we are allowed to visit from the starting point of our own experience has rich potential for adventure. But it's not the heroic adventure of robbing tombs and stealing treasure. It's the adventure of putting regular people we can relate to into fantastic situations and seeing what happens to those people while we also get to explore an interesting and immersive other world. Now, let's say our moderns don't last long in the fantasy realm. Does that matter? We can, of course, repeat the pattern and send in more modern characters via the Dread Portal. But we can also, having met the inhabitants of the fantasy realm, begin to better imagine ourselves in their everyday life. From here, someone is bound to ask, "Hey, can I play the daughter of that blacksmith we met in Erasia?" And the GM can say yes. And a new fantasy character is born in the mind of the player, who now better understands how that character might think, feel, or behave in the world they were born into. And perhaps, along the way, the player gets to discard the unnecessary generic tropes that don't apply to this world. Would that be a pathway into immersing ourselves deeper in a new fantasy otherworld? In many ways, I think this is even easier with science fiction. The modern mindset is likely to already exist, or at least to have already existed in the past, within that new speculative universe. If the distance in time is short, say within 100 years, I think you can dispense with the portal. But if we are going deep into the far future, perhaps it's time for the modern equivalent of the Connecticut Yankee to whiz himself off into that future universe through a time gate. For me, a tool that lets my players grasp onto and experience a connection between their real, lived experience and the imaginary otherworld experience I want to offer them, that tool might just be worth deploying. And so for me, I think that great magic still exists in the technology of an open portal. Game on.
Hey Jay, just listening to the bonus episode on worlds and underdogs, and something you said made me think. You know, you spoke about how the Lord of the Rings was separate from Middle Earth, and I was just wondering, could it be that we discover and see the world that Tolkien created, that is Middle-earth, through the lens of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and The Silmarillion, etc. So that, yes, indeed, they are independent of each other. However, The Lord of the Rings and the novels would definitely need to be dependent on the world. But that is how we discover that world. The world exists beyond those books, but those are the only bits of the world that have been revealed to us. He draws the curtain back just a bit and reveals to us a moment in time in a very specific place. But that does not mean that time does not go on and that place does not exist in a greater sense. Sounds very romantic and mystical, but I definitely think that a good world, an interesting world, is one that has many places yet to discover, yet to be discovered. What do you think?
I think compelling worlds are trans-narrative. They are beyond a single narrative. And I think what Tolkien does as an example of this is he creates multiple narratives that draw upon the same fictional world, and which kind of draw us into a sense that this secondary world is much larger than the places that we're visiting within a narrative. And I think a really good secondary world is also trans character. I think it's outside of an individual character, you know, that in fact, by having the same characters like Bilbo, for example, turn up in two of his stories, he gives us a sense of that character existing outside of one narrative and implies that there are other possible narratives. And I think this is what happens. It's this implication of something much larger, which builds up through having more than one narrative. So I think in a role-playing game, perhaps like one session with a character isn't really enough. You know, that actually the idea of taking my character to a second and third and fourth session, and perhaps even beyond my first, you know, adventure, the first emergent narrative that comes from that game, that is when my character starts to actually take deeper form, that there is an implied kind of space between the narratives, if it were. And I think that as we experience a world that we hear contains lots of places that we haven't visited, we have this expectation that grows of something being larger than us. Now, I think that what then happens is as we immerse ourselves in that creative act of imagining what that place is like, you know, as it's described to us, as we interact with it, it takes on a sense of real. That realism, the belief that this is real, is what is kind of triggered here. And then from there, I think that we start seeking and exploring it. Now, as long as the creator of that world keeps expanding the outer boundaries and presenting us with new possibilities, new places, new characters that we have yet to meet, then potentially, you know, we can keep exploring that world on and on and on, inexhaustibly, really. I think that this, the incompleteness of
the fantasy world. It's the sense that it is yet not yet explored that actually is quite compelling. At least, that's what I think.
That's it for this week on Roleplay Rescue. If you enjoyed the show and want to support the podcast, there are a bunch of things that you could do. Most generous of all, you could leave a review or positive rating. If you're on Twitter, follow me at UbiquitousRat. And big thanks to all the listeners who not only follow me, but also like and retweet episode announcements. If you're on MeWe, you can look me up and connect, or you could find the Roleplay Rescue page. If you have comments, you could drop me a call in via anchor.fm/RPGRescue, or email your sound recording directly to hello@RPGRescue.com. If you are looking for more Roleplay Rescue, check out the blog at roleplayrescue.com, where I randomly post quick thoughts and gaming stuff as the whim takes me. If you want to buy me a digital coffee by way of thanks, why not drop by ko-fi.com/cwebster. And finally, if you want to support the show with a little pocket change on a regular basis, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/rpgrescue. Thank you to all the patrons. You guys keep me energized and motivated. Links to all of these places can be found in the show notes. Thanks to TJ Drennan for the main theme and stingers. Thanks to Anchor for airing and distributing the podcast to a huge range of podcatching services. And thanks to you, the listener. Well, for listening. I'm Che Webster. This is Roleplay Rescue. Game on.